anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset.
Okay, well, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. I'm here with my professor, Professor Lucas Hubo. Professor, good to
see
you.
Welcome back, everyone. Good to see you, Trooper. How's everything going?
Everything is going good. My name's Pete Dealey, and I'm along for the ride here. I've got my submission coffee cup today in addition to my submission coffee. So we like our caffeine around here. Professor, did you caffeine up this week? Yeah.
Two times today, just have my second coffee on.
I've taken to adding it to my smoothies. I'm taking my coffee when I make, like if I have a fruit smoothie, I use almond milk and submission coffee. So, but I only have 6 or 7 cups an hour. So, Professor, today there's been a buzz right in the jiu-jitsu world because we have had such, you know, important competitions in the last couple of weeks. The most important, as I've learned what the acronym stands for, the Abu Dhabi Combat Club, the ADCC fight was correct. In Las Vegas, which is in very close to Arizona, where the professor and I are talking to you from. And I know you got to go this year. So we wanted to spend some time talking about your experience and the fight itself, how it's changed over the years. And that's what I thought we'd talk about.
Absolutely. It was a amazing experience being there on the ADCC. That's definitely an event that I was looking forward to go since I started training and start to know more about this type of event. And what I have been hearing, like from the media and from the ADCC organizers and from the competitors, that was by far the best event ever made. ADCC happened every other year. The last one was in Irvine, California. I'm not sure actually was Irvine or Long Beach. I think Long Beach.
Okay.
And then they took an extra year break because COVID. So it was like 3 years, 2 years apart, this last ADCC. And it was in Las Vegas. It was absolutely amazing. The amount of people, the spectators was awesome. It was almost like being in a UFC. That was the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting I didn't get to go, but I got a chance to watch closely through social media and to see pictures and videos and so on. Before we get too far down the road of the experience, and I have a bunch of questions that I want to talk about, not everybody will know what ADCC is. And although we've talked about it in previous podcasts, could you just remind us what it is and perhaps the nature of the competition, so everybody is aware of what it
is. Yes, being really brief on the conversation about that, ADCC, like you said, Abu Dhabi Combat Club, that was, I believe it was founded in 1998 by a sheikh in Abu Dhabi. And he was a jiu-jitsu student. Well, he was here in the United States doing college. He was doing college in San Diego. He started to train jiu-jitsu under now master Nelson Monteiro and Gracie Barra Encinitas. And all his years in the United States, no one knew who he was. He was just like a random student. And after he graduated in college, he told Master Nelson and the others that who he actually was, right? How important he was for the country. After that, they started to have a really good, even better relationship between Master Nelson and the Sheikh. And Master went a couple of times to Abu Dhabi to keep teaching him. And the Sheikh wanna try to develop jiu-jitsu over there.
Right.
And the first idea to create ADCC was actually to be like MMA fights, not a jiu-jitsu, not a grappling fight.
Okay, right.
But the Sheikh's dad could never allow that happen because, no, that's too violent. We don't allow this. So that's how the rules And the display of the ADCC is a little bit different than regular jiu-jitsu or grappling, other grappling tournaments.
Right.
So from that, since like 1998 till now, to 2022, so much change. It became the tournament that that a grapplers want to participate in.
Right.
Like I say, it happened every other year in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. You need to win a trial or be invited or be a former champion to be able to participate in. So if you are a competitor and you were there competing at the ADCC, you're already on the high level as possible that jiu-jitsu and grappler can bring to you.
So when people think of a jiu-jitsu tournament that are not a part of jiu-jitsu, they probably think about two competitors in a gi. And so could you talk about, for those who might not know the nature of the competition, sort of, you know, when the grapplers go, they're in a no, this is a no-gi tournament, right? There's no gis ever, and there never has been, right? So it's always been a no-gi tournament.
Yeah, so Abu Dhabi, the ADCC tournament is always in no-gi, mm-hmm. right? And different than other jiu-jitsu no-gi tournaments, the ADCC don't give you like exactly standards on what you need to use.
Okay.
Right? So for example, if you're going to compete in a no-gi tournament through IBJJF, your ranking, so like your belt, they should be showing the color of your belt, they should be showing some way through your rash guard.
Right.
If you're a black belt, totally fine. You can compete like all black, that's totally fine. But if you're a brown belt, for example, or a purple or blue mm-hmm. or white belt, you need to have at least, I believe, 40% of your rash guard showing the color of your belt.
Okay.
Okay, so you have this ranking system. In ADCC, you can compete full rash guard. You can compete with shorts and shirt. Some guys just almost like back in the day competing with a Speedo and that's it.
Right, yeah.
So I have all kinds.
So the you know, when you're thinking, if you're new to jiu-jitsu, you may think of it as a sport that is exclusively done in a gi. And so if you look it up, you'll see, you know, people that are in clothes that are, you know, rash guard. If you're not familiar with what a rash guard is, you've probably seen it down at the beach. You know, it's like a really skin tight shirt. You know, and obviously the pants or shorts are designed in such a way you don't want to have any loose clothing. So these people are, you know, fighting each other without anything to grab onto. And that's like the no-gi tournaments.
And that's funny that you mentioned that, Peter, about like, if you're not familiar with the rash guard, right? It's almost like what a surfer would use to get a wave. And if you look at the videos of the first ADCCs, like 1998, 2001, the rash guard, like the jiu-jitsu world wasn't like marked the way how it is right now.
Right.
So you could see a lot of the fighters actually using like
their surfing gear.
Like Oakley or whatever the brand. You know, it's pretty funny to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I certainly it feels like there's an affinity too between jiu-jitsu fighters and surfing, and I don't know whether that's true, but maybe just because I read the Hickson book and
100%, you see, like it's a big community in Rio, the surfers and jiu-jitsu guys, Hawaii, same thing, mm-hmm. California, they get along really well, and a lot of jiu-jitsu players, they're really good surfers, and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just
similar lifestyle, I would say.
Yeah, that notion of being balanced and being able to kind of feel momentum shifting one way or another, I think speaks to both activities, in my opinion. I'm a body surfer myself. I don't like to board. I like to body surf. But
be already be on the ground.
So is it fair to say that in the grappling and jiu-jitsu world that this is the biggest tournament, the most important tournament of the year? Is that accurate? Okay. So without a doubt. Okay. Whoever's the top performer and whoever the top performers in this tournament are considered the best in the world at
for the no-gi world, yes.
Okay.
Because the gi and no-gi, they doesn't translate exactly the same way, right? Okay.
Right.
Not necessarily the main gi competitors are focused themselves on no gi game. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So on the last 10 years or so, the no gi community grew a lot. Okay. And then we can have like 1,000 different reasons for that, that we can try to talk about some of them here. But if when you're talking about a no-gi world, ABCC is the highest standard that you're going to have.
Okay.
On gi will be the IBJJF worlds.
Okay. Okay. Now at the top levels, is there an attitude among the top gi players versus the top no gi players about which one is either truer to the sport or to the art or truer to being a better fighter? I mean, is there any, or is it totally friendly? Like they don't think about that at all. Is there any friendly competition between the two worlds?
I think it used to be more.
Okay.
Now with Gordon Ryan situations, right?
Yeah.
It starts to become like less friendly because Gordon Ryan just talks a lot. He promoted himself really well, right? So I give it that credit for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that be also the haters, right? Like all the other side. Of him. Oh, but he just do no gi. So I wish he would come with gi here, you know? So it's still, I mean, it is a really friendly thing. The no gi will always, the no gi guys only, they always going to say, well, but no one walk with gi on the street. You know, you guys say, well, but you guys do things like ripping and things like that, that you're not allowed while we train.
Sure.
So you're always going to have a little, you know, arguing about that.
Right.
But more and more you see that those guys like going to the master themselves in no-gi as well.
So when you went to this year's ADCC, I mean, one of the things that I'm curious about and that I think matters if you're considering jiu-jitsu as either, you know, you want to go give it a try or you're like trying to think about like, do I put my kid in or not, is the environment. Like what I want to hear about is when you walk through the spectators, did you find it to be a group of people that were looking for an excuse to get into, you know, to use their jiu-jitsu right there in the middle of just to prove their toughness and the fact that, or did you find it to be an environment of, you know, respect that like everybody had a similar attitude about like, look, you know, we're, who knows, first of all, who you're going decide to do that with. I mean, what did it feel like? Did it feel like a tense environment or did it feel relaxed?
So that's really funny because that was something that we, the group of the guys that we went there to watch, we were talking about that. So I'm from Brazil, right, Peter? So I grew up going to soccer games. And soccer games in Brazil, South America in general, they're like, it's not a friendly atmosphere at all. Like where you go, usually it's not a place that you're going to go for a kid. Now, like things got way better. You have like some sections that is really good to go, families and things like that. But it was always a place where you keep your hands in your pockets when you're walking, you know, walk fast, just like
head down,
just go head down,
right?
Go, you know, don't.
Yeah.
Really easy for something goes wrong over there,
right?
In concerts, sometimes the same thing.
Sure.
ADCC was one of the most like friendly environments that I ever been in a crowd.
Wow.
It looks like it was about 14 or 15,000 tickets sold.
Wow.
And it was one of those places, probably because a lot of the guys there at jiu-jitsu are martial artists,
right?
On the moment that you maybe bumping someone, you know, when you're walking, I'm so sorry, excuse me, and this and that.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm so sorry. It was one of the most friendly places, like in a big crowd that I've ever been.
That's so, yeah. It's
you
funny.
See all those guys like jacket big, like the ears all big. And I'm so sorry, I apologize, and this and that, you know, being super respectful. I didn't see anything. I don't know if it actually happened, but I didn't see anything going wrong on that way. The lines being respective, like even had bars outside and like everyone super friendly with each other. It's pretty cool.
That is really cool. It's funny you put that up against soccer because like Europe had that whole soccer hooligans, you know, phenomenon a long time ago of, you know, that those environments people identified with their town so much, and they go and they'll see those games, it'd be all kinds of fighting and all the rest of it.
A lot of times, like I was going, so I my team in Brazil is São Paulo,
right?
But sometimes if I was going to watch São Paulo playing on my actual city, Campinas, against a team from Campinas,
right?
It was that case when I was a kid that I would just use, my dad was like, just use a random t-shirt. Don't put São Paulo's t-shirt, because if you're walking by and people from your team on that game day see you walking with a different t-shirt, they're going to take your t-shirt away.
Yeah.
Am I going to beat you? And they're going to
take
your, you know, so that was this type of the environment that like soccer was. Right? Yeah. I don't think it is like that anymore, but it was like that.
Right. So it's funny just because I think the connotation of like a soccer game for people, and particularly Americans that may not have had that South American or European soccer mm-hmm. culture experience where it gets out of control in some instances, and maybe not so much, but certainly there has been lots of soccer games around the world that got out of hand, that here we have these martial artists. And what I'm hearing is that it was the opposite, that people went out of their way to kind of be friendly and polite. And if somebody got jostled, that they made it absolutely clear that, look, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to bump you or any of that stuff.
100%.
Because I got to think it's probably a pretty testosterone filled, you know, bunch of tough guys, I mean, in this environment. But it sounds like the way they treated each other by and large was, and if you didn't even see any fighting, I mean, I think that's a real statement. Do you connect that to the ethic of the, was it fear that like people didn't want to jostle the wrong guy and get beat up? Or was it connected to, you think, hey, when you train,
you don't want
to fight? I mean, that's
it was
not...
exactly. It was like a respectful thing, you know?
Right.
We all have our bad days.
Sure.
And some days you're going to see me not on my very best. You know, that doesn't mean that we need to get in a fight on that day.
Right.
So that's what I believe it happens on this type of stage.
Mm-hmm.
These guys just like respect each other, regardless whatever is happening. Everyone is there to have a good time.
Right.
And no one is there to prove something.
Yeah.
Right? Because they know that's not a thing. Like we do that on the mat, you know?
Right. So the environment was, you didn't have to think about, you know, things getting out of hand. And when I looked at the pictures in the video, the UFC is what came to mind. And so as a sport, do you think this is the type of production value, for lack of a better term, that will start to bring people to watch this, even if they're not a jiu-jitsu athlete? Like, do you feel like it's a beginning of the spreading of this beyond the jiu-jitsu community? Yeah.
Because that's the thing with what the media is trying to, they finally understood, and now they're trying to translate that to the general public.
Right.
Right. Statistically, I think like people that actually are watching UFC is like 2 or 3% of them actually do a martial art.
Right. Right. Yes.
If you're watching NFL, like 1% of the people that are watching actually play football, you mm-hmm. know? So and jiu-jitsu is so complex. That's a problem. And gi make things even more complex,
right?
So many traps. He's a lasso guard. He's a lapel guard. He's a worm guard, and this and that. You know, he's a loop chokes. It makes hard to understand what's happening.
Right.
No gi, things end up getting a little more clean, right? Mm-hmm. In a visual way.
Right.
So trying to make a big production like that on all kinds, like a nice stage. Las Vegas must be one of the best places to do something like that.
Right.
The sound system of the arena was incredible. Fires when the fires were there. They even had like Bruce Buffer announcing the finals. All those like small, mm-hmm. really expensive, but small things.
Yes, right, right.
It makes like people want to be there to watch, you know, and having a better understanding of what's happened. So trying to translate the difficulty and the complex jiu-jitsu to people that who doesn't know,
right?
Just bringing a nice atmosphere.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we compare things to the UFC and you think about sports in general, before we began our podcast earlier in the day, I was thinking about when you watch the Olympics on a U.S., you know, like NBC or one of the big networks, you spend as much time watching the story of the athletes than you do watch the athletes themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's because the sports themselves, the contests themselves, in lots of different sports, like not, people don't have a keen eye for, like, soccer is a great example, because I was a soccer player. Not everybody likes to watch soccer because it just doesn't, they don't understand it quite in a technical way. Whereas like basketball, you don't have to wonder, is the dunk cool? Like a dunk is super cool to watch, you know. But having a story connected to the contest makes the contest more interesting. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past. In the 70s, when I was a little kid, Muhammad Ali was the dominant sports figure. You know, in my family, like Pele would have been like important to us because we like soccer, but Ali captured, certainly as a kid, like my imagination. But that's because he was not just a great boxer. He had a big mouth and he was funny and engaging and good with the media. He was an interesting person to watch. And in the 60s, you know, if you were an Ali guy or a Joe Frazier guy, and that you, that mattered to you politically, like you represented different points of view. So you were, he was a divisive figure earlier in his career. So that's a long way of introducing the subject of Gordon Ryan. And I'm like, it feels to me, and I'm still consider myself new to the sport, I mean, just a couple years in, that if you have a casual understanding of the jiu-jitsu world, you probably can name Gordon Ryan in, well, who do you know out there? And that's not just because he's good at jiu-jitsu. So, I mean, how do you feel about his presence in the jiu-jitsu world? And is it positive? Is it negative? Is it a mix of both? I mean, he's certainly a brash person and he's certainly winning. You know, I mean, there's no argument about, I think he's like 58 tournaments in a row or something. I mean, some crazy.
Yeah, I think now, well, probably after this ADCC, he's over 60 matches, like winning straight.
So the put that in perspective.
Like 2018.
Right.
And the nicest part about that statistic is like in a fight situation, that doesn't happen at all, you know?
Right.
Roger Gracie, one of the biggest names of all times, if not the biggest name of all times, I think he had like a 20 fights winning straight. You know, that was the most that he had.
Wow.
And then you can bring like different type of competitions, you know, the amount of fights that can give more to one side or the other. In the end of the day, in my opinion, it doesn't matter. It true is he is absolutely good.
Yes. Right. Yeah. There's no argument there. It's not like he's somebody with a big mouth and he's not talented.
People he's the best of all times. I think he might could be, you know, he won't be maybe one day. It's just like too soon to say that, because the other guys that you could compare to him did what he did for a longer time, right? So maybe not so dominant the way how he's doing.
Right.
But after a 20 years, 30 years career, and then we can analyze, in my opinion, if he's the best of all times.
Of all times,
if he's the best right now, for sure. You know, that's like, and it hurts a little bit for me to say that, but no, just kidding. I always keep going back and forth on my feelings for Gordon Ryan, you know.
So he's somebody that, I mean, as a newcomer to the sport, you know, in the last couple of years paying attention, I mean, he shows up in the conversation about jiu-jitsu in places that non-jiu-jitsu people listen to. Like Joe Rogan is the easiest person I can think of where he's showing up. And what I'm curious about from your perspective is his public behavior a business decision, that this is like a professional wrestler's act? You know, in professional wrestler, you have, they call it the baby face and the heel, right? Like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, like would be the heel because he'd be the villain, and then there he'd beat up the baby face, and sometimes he'd be the baby. So is this like, is some of that brashness a business decision, or is he just a brash guy and that's who he is? And I mean, what do you think is the case?
A bit of both.
Okay.
I think I don't know him personally. I know some people that know him personally, and those guys told me they're like, man, he's fine, you know, he's not like the nicest guy in the world, but he's not the baddest guy in the world as well. You know, he's
Right.
actually kind of like quiet. He does his own thing and that's it.
Right.
But he definitely brings a lot of attention for things that he says on social media. And it must be a little bit of his personality on that way, or just a character that he's playing
Right.
to bring attention. The truth is, it is working for him in all aspects, like having people that love him or having people that hate him.
Right. Yeah, both is good,
You
right?
look at to yeah, if you look to his social media, the amount of followers he has,
Right.
the amount of instructional DVDs that he sell, and the thing is, he talks a lot of crap, but he's standing for what everything that he say. He's winning. He's beating literally everyone,
Yeah,
you know.
right.
So
It's
he's
not close. And from what I understand, like he fought Galvao is like as great a champion as he could have fought, right? I mean, it's not like he was fighting somebody that is in a different league of greatness. Like, and from what I understand, it
We can argue on age difference and like Galvan is like 40 years old, Gordon is 27, you know, so we can argue about the physicality and prime in jiu-jitsu and all things like that.
Right.
So I personally don't like at all to compare different generations
Right.
because the access to technology,
Yes.
you know, to the sport, the way how sports evolve. Like if you put Pelé to play soccer right now, he won't even touch the ball, you
Right,
know.
yeah.
But just because the way how sport grow, but with his genius the way how he is, he probably will adapt himself to that,
Right,
right?
yeah.
So I'm really skeptical. Skeptical. What was the word?
Skeptical. Yeah.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
On
Thank you.
compare the generations,
Right.
but it is like especially talking about ADCC. Galvão has been fighting. I think his first ADCC was 2003.
Wow.
Gordon not even like was training jiu-jitsu in 2003, you
Right.
know, and he has like so many super fights that he won. So yes, like that was the final, kind of like the final contest. Two guys that Gordon need to beat, right? It's Galvão and Felipe Pena.
Right.
He just did recently both.
So, I mean, do you think that, I mean, when I listen to you say that, I mean, I can hear he makes you animated, like, you know, so, and I think that, when I follow him really casually on social media, I see what you're saying. Like he's got plenty of people, whatever he says out there, lots of people want to react to. So, it seemed like ADCC was pretty well attended. I mean, I don't know if the place was sold out, but
It
it looked,
was,
you know, it was packed, right?
back.
Do you got, I mean, I have to believe that a portion of those people are there just to see him, you know, that he brought in,
Absolutely.
right? I mean,
Oh yeah.
yeah.
Just for have an idea, Pete, his last fight before ADCC was against Felipe Pena
Right.
and was on Flow Grappling on the Thirticals, on a Who's Number One event.
Okay.
Okay. That match only had more spectators on Flow Grappling than the whole ADCC in
Yeah.
2019. Just that match.
Right.
And it has a lot of history between those two, so everyone wanna watch that match. But just for having an idea how influential he is, like
Yes.
the crowd when he shows up on the mat, like when they start to announce all the competitors. So
They
that
go
was
crazy.
amazing.
Yeah.
It goes, looks like that was a touchdown. It was not even me. I was
Yeah.
actually like, I don't like it, but I'm not, you know.
Well, I think that, I mean, the athletics thrives in the context of money, and that, you know, to think that it doesn't, I mean, is foolish. And so if his online showing, you know, was more widely attended than the previous like championship of no-gi, you know, jiu-jitsu, then that's really saying something. And money generally follows eyeballs, and so, you know, people want to come and be a part of those big audiences, which will benefit everybody else in the sport. And I mean, my analogy to it is CrossFit, because my beginnings in CrossFit was it was a website, and there was a, you know, the CrossFit games were out in Aromas in this guy's ranch, and it was a really small community relative to what it became. Mm-hmm. And then when Reebok kind of smartly recognized that this was, you know, a trend that was going to be huge, and they came in to sponsor it, then all of a sudden, you know, it was on TV, and it became, and Rich Froning was the first CrossFit athlete to make $1 million. And he was a terrific ambassador for CrossFit, right? Because he's a good looking guy. He's like, there was no argument with Rich either. Nobody was like, he was the dominant person of the time, and who knows how long if he chose to kind of pursue that. But that his, he brought a lot of attention to that community. I mean, Reebok was the one that had the money, but they needed somebody to tell the story to, and Rich was great to do that. And
then probably Matt Frazier after that, right?
Yeah, Matt Frazier doesn't have his time without Rich doing what he did. And, you know, Mikko Salo wins before Rich Froning. And I think, you know, for Mikko, who is a tremendous athlete in his own right, doesn't get any really of that.
I don't
even
know who is him.
Yeah, right, honest. Exactly. That's exactly right. Nobody knows Mikko. But Mikko came in and won one of the first ones that I paid attention to. But it was just us that was connected to that community kind of back then, which is just a long way around getting to the point that his influence to bring those people and get excited and to be hated and loved and all the rest of it, it energizes the sport in its own way and will bring additional dollars. One of the things that I couldn't tell on social media that when you were there in person, could you start to see the influence of brands and other businesses that are starting to compete for the attention of the jiu-jitsu community?
You have like, I think not yet, maybe probably on the backstage, yes, but you have those that was a exclusive event by Flow Grappling. So Flow Grappling was the only one that could stream the competition.
Right.
Maybe next time they were also going to have pay-per-view, right? So Flow Grappling worked by a subscription, monthly subscription. Mm-hmm. And maybe on the next one, they're going to do like a pay-per-view. So I'm sure they have some type of competition on that area. Well, mats and, you know, all those things. But
right.
It's nice to see growing on that way, you know. And exactly like you said, like Gordon doing what he does, he has the haters, he has the guys that love him as well. So the guys that love him, like every time that he talk some trash about someone else, they get energetic, right? They just want to see that match going. And the haters, they want him to lose so bad, right? So it brings attention anyway. Like it's that thing that does exist bad media, right?
All press is good press. Right.
But at the same time, I particularly don't like that type of relationship. Yeah. Not even like on UFC with like Chael Sonnen and then Conor McGregor.
Right.
You know, I think you have a limit for everything. It's okay. You talk about you, how good you are, you know.
Right.
But you always, that's my personality and it is what it is. Like that's something that is working.
Right.
So yeah, I think.
is he as an athlete? I mean, as a practitioner, beyond bringing attention to the sport, do you feel like he's changing the way that people are grappling with each other or fighting with each other? So his influence is beyond a business influence. Like he's the sport itself is being changed.
No, he's definitely
by
he and his team, right, with John Danaher and the other guys. Because also think like that. Gordon's been training jiu-jitsu for around 12 years.
Okay.
Which is not that long, actually. Like I trained for a longer time than him.
Right.
And I think he did about 2 years gi and all the others straight no gi on.
Straight. He's a no gi player. Yeah.
So that brings like a huge advantage in a way that he's training much more than everyone else.
Right.
I don't know if you ever saw that interview with Kobe Bryant talking when he was like waking up at 4 because he can train between 6 and 8. he takes a little break, and then he trained like 11 to 1. He takes another break. He trains like 5 to 7. He takes another. So over the years, he can train much more than everyone else. So people are always behind him. And that's right. What I think was one of the things that happened with Gordon Ryan. He's just like years ahead of the competitors on that type of thing.
Well, and I don't, I don't want to claim any expertise with him, but I mean, when I've listened to his interviews, he's talked a little bit about his online instruction, mm-hmm. and he talks about he can go and create an instructional video that over the course of a year could bring him $1 million, and it takes him a weekend to produce the video. Right. And so the reason why I think that's important and what he talked about, we probably saw the same interview, is that it allowed him to be treated. It allowed him to act as a professional athlete where mm-hmm. he could train exclusively and not have to like have a job and then train, you know, like we've talked about this with your, you know, with your competitive career. You run a business and you have, you know, the mm-hmm. responsibilities of, you know, business ownership and all the things that come along with your life that are means that you have to fit your competitive training in around. But it does not seem that there are many people in the same situation as Gordon Ryan that they can prioritize training above their economic lives. I mean, all of us have to, all of us have to have jobs to take care of our bills, you know? So, and I don't have a point of view because I can't name any other coaches other than John Danaher. Uh-huh. But I mean, the fact that I can name him must make him important in some way. Like I don't know if he's as great a coach as he's positioned as, but he seems to be. I mean, his product is certainly good. I mean, all of it.
I think those two, they're the perfect puzzles for each other because John Danaher is also a guy that he's really smart. He can do almost anything. Like he can't. Like his body doesn't allow him. He's all messed up. His mm-hmm. shoulders, knees, and everything. But he's a jiu-jitsu fanatic. Like that's what I have been seeing. Right. He watches videos the whole time, the whole day. Like he does. Yeah. That's all he thinks. Mm-hmm. So he's analyzed everything really well, and that works really well with Gordon Ryan. He has other students as well, but most of those other students came from different places too. So I think it's also really too soon to say that he's the best coach of all time because his main product now is Gordon Ryan. But before that, didn't have anyone else, you know?
Yeah.
He can be also like the great coach of all time, but in my opinion, also it'll take time for be able to say that for sure.
Without a doubt.
But I haven't seen a lot of videos of him teaching. It's really interesting the way how he sees things, the concepts that he creates. Yeah. I mean, not creates, but the concepts that he's able to translate mm-hmm. For people to try to understand the positions better, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's I have no idea as to his financial success. Like, I don't know the full extent of Gordon Ryan's financial success, but he's clearly turned his athletic success into an empire of sorts that first of all allows him to train differently than his competitors, which seems to make a difference. And I'm sure there are other things that I'm unaware of that are creating a really prosperous life for him. I don't know if that's the case for John Danaher. It's probably not as prosperous as Gordon Ryan, but mm-hmm. I've seen him in little parts in movies and that, you know, he's getting attention in the world via that. I'm curious. I mean, so if Gordon Ryan was the draw as the celebrity that showed up, did anybody in the ADCC strike you as like, hey, this is somebody who people would love to watch that they don't know about? But, you know, I saw two brothers that seemed kind of cool to, you know, they're cool looking, that's for sure.
Those two brothers, they've been on jiu-jitsu media probably since when they were like orange belts.
Okay.
So they've been trained jiu-jitsu since 3 years old.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I think the one that won, Kadia Rotolo.
Rotolo.
He's like the youngest ADCC champion ever now.
Oh, okay.
And those two kids, they're... It's amazing. Like they are good on everything. Like all position, and they have like couple, three or four things that are better than everyone else.
Okay.
You know, the way how they scramble, the way how they use the opponent weight and the pace that they have on everything. It's awesome to see. It was like,
so is there that there when, if you're a non-jiu-jitsu player and you went to go see those two,
you definitely will have fun watching them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there are those guys that make things super entertaining. Man, like it's not like, for example, even Gordon Ryan fighting, as much as super entertaining to see him winning, mm-hmm. sometimes like he's not like the fastest guy. He right. doesn't go for something crazy, right? He controls in an absolutely crazy way and submit people. Right. Those two kids, they're just like literally like backflips and things like that. You know, it makes things so plastic, almost like a Bruce Lee movie in real life.
Right. And yeah, I had that.
Those two, another Brazilian guy called Mika Galvão, is another kid.
Okay.
End up doing the finals with one of those two brothers. And in my opinion, Mika was actually winning the match. Mm. It was kind of like controlling a little bit more. But all it takes is not even a mistake. It's an opportunity for the other one. And just got like heel hooks super fast. End up losing the finals against the Rotolo brother. But those three, and plus Gordon Ryan, of course.
Right.
Like make it things like super, like just to have them step on the mat going crazy. And they have like different personalities. Like the Rotolo brothers, like showmen, you know?
Right. Yeah.
They're loved by everyone. But at the same time, they're like, they bring the crowd up.
Yeah.
They do backflips after they win the match. It's like, and Mika is super, like, he bow, he reverence for the all sides of the crowd. He wins and he does like a small, like a little smile, you know, super respectful.
Right.
And I love it. Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, that's great. Well, I think those things will matter, you know, that they'll, because people, I think about soccer in this country, right? Like Ronaldo and Messi and like these great players. I think people, who are not soccer people know some of those soccer celebrities or like David Beckham, right? Because they're handsome guys and, you know, David Beckham's with whatever Spice Girl he married. And, you know, there's celebrities beyond the sport. And in this country, we have some UFC people. I mean, Conor McGregor is famous beyond himself as a fighter. You know, he's in the Gordon Ryan camp of like being brash, but, I think when I looked at the athleticism of the Rotolo brothers, I was so impressed with them purely as athletes, you know. And then they had the interesting personal style. Like one of them has that crazy hair. And, you know, I can imagine when I think about jiu-jitsu as a business that's developing in the country, if I'm a sponsor, I look for something that will really be attractive to people to want to see, you know, and sometimes it's the sport itself, but sometimes it's more often it's the personality and that creates celebrity, you know, not just a fan, but somebody who's important beyond that. And I hope that the sport has some of that stuff, because I think it will bring it, it will enrich the sport over time as money comes into it. Which leads us to like my final question about like that is, over time, just like in the high school system in this country, right? Like the bigger high schools often produce the best teams. That's why we have like bigger high schools play high schools of similar size. You know, the United States pours more money into its athletics on balance than any other country on the planet. You know, maybe you could make an argument that soccer in Europe has all the you know, lots of money flowing into it. But anyway, money produces training programs that produce great athletes. The ADCC 10 years from now, is it filled? Are the best athletes going to it from Brazil, or are they coming from the United States? I mean, what do you think will happen?
Peter, now you hit a nerve. Oh man, that's, look, everything everything that I'm saying here is my personal perspective and things that I think, right? So, but it seems, I don't know if 10 years, maybe more, but it seems United States, Europe, they will start to dominate like more ADCC than the Brazilians. I think the Brazilians still hold like 85 or 90% of the titles on, on ADCC through the course of those like 20 plus years. But the amount of, first, a lot of the Brazilian champions, the best professors, masters, they are all in United States or in Europe.
Okay.
It still has a feel in Brazil for sure. And every day we have some talents coming in.
Sure.
But most of the better coaches and professors and athletes are training outside the country, outside Brazil.
Yeah.
Which over time makes younger generations on those countries that they're living now, right? They become their idols and they are those guys that are looking every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
We start to grow the sport here as well. So this is a, is one fact for sure.
Right.
Second one, I would say, Nogi is growing a lot, especially. Jiu-Jitsu is growing, but Nogi is growing, looks like even a faster pace.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't know that.
And you can only wrestle for so long, right? Wrestling is a big part of United States sport. But you don't see like a 50 years old, a 40 or 35 or 20. If you're not professional, you're never going to wrestle anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
But you can totally bring that background to jiu-jitsu. You know?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
So maybe you are good enough, like a really good wrestler, college wrestling, but not good enough to make to the Olympic teams and make a career on that.
Yeah.
But you're still like a really top level.
Right.
You know, the moment that you start to learn some jiu-jitsu, those matches, it depends on the rules, it will be really, really hard for even for the top jiu-jitsu guys be able to be that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
That's another plus.
Yeah.
And then, and that goes for Europe too. Like, right?
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
Then you have also the amount of like everything that, like you were saying, like the investment that the country does.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start small, like the access to healthy food, to supplements, to a really good gym, to a really good facility for your training, an easier way, like easier to finance, like access to internet and the technology to see videos, to interact with people. All those small things at the end will count a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's 10 years, but it seems like United States, Europe, they will start to gain way more space on jiu-jitsu as a whole, but definitely in ADCC in the Nogi era.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and I'm sorry for hitting a nerve.
Yeah, we thought, I'm going to drink some submission coffee and then let's go roll later.
The next time, I was going to say, next time I'm rolling with you, I think I'm going to pay a heavy price. I'm not educated about the Brazilian, like, sports. What's the right word for it? I mean, my point of view about professional athletics is formed as an American, right? So, like, I understand the business of NFL in addition to football, right? I have a sense of, like, when I look at the NBA, Major League Baseball, National League Hockey, all of these, you know, and I have family that have worked in sports development. So, like, knowing what it means to develop kids from a young age to groom them ultimately to become college and professional athletes. And so we have a whole big industry in this country of looking to identify talent early so they can play later in their life. In Brazil, do they have a similar system where they care about, like, producing champions? And what's, I mean, I don't know. I think of soccer as the national sport of Brazil. I mean, that's because of my relationship to soccer in general. But I mean, jiu-jitsu's got to be, well, now, because I know jiu-jitsu, feels like that's the second national sport. Like, I don't know if that's true or not, but.
No, probably way behind that.
Okay.
But I understand that. Like, a lot of people, that's what they think. Like, it's a soccer and jiu-jitsu. Like, everyone in Brazil does jiu-jitsu. But I always give that example, even though I'm training for almost 18 years, my mom still doesn't know how to say jiu-jitsu correct. She always say like, yeah, jiu-jitsu or whatever the way how she said. But so since we're talking a little bit about soccer, okay, I'm going to give that example as well. I believe for years now, Brazil is not the best soccer team in the world, like how it should be.
Right.
You know, I think the last finals in the World Cup Brazil did was 2002.
Yeah,
that was the fifth championship. But after that, it's like, you know, losing for other countries, which is fine. It's a sport, it's a game. But you see a lot of talent still, but not the same structure that the other countries has. And and that's about the conversation that we had about a couple of years from now, how the jiu-jitsu scenario scene will be, right? I think every day you're going to have like so much talent coming from Brazil from whatever sport, but especially like from jiu-jitsu, from soccer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that much incentive for for the government, for the companies to keep that thing going. So we do have a lot of social projects. A lot of the champions, like Leandro Lua, right? He came from a social project. Tererê is a guy like from the 90s and early 2000s, one of the biggest names of all times. Also, like he also came from a social project. André Galvão, he started like also in a social project.
Right.
But you name like a handful of people.
Yeah.
You know? And I guarantee you, we also have another thousands that could be good as those guys. You
right.
know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, for me, when as a soccer fan, I mean, in Europe, the European leagues have, there's so much incentive to play, you know, in that arena where professional soccer in this country, the money goes to basketball, football, hockey, baseball. I mean, we haven't gravitated to that as a sport in the same way. And consequently, you know, we haven't produced the same championship level players, or they leave and go, you know, obviously overseas. So it'd be, I'm really interested in the community as it develops, because that'll be interesting to see what businesses decide to attach themselves to the jiu-jitsu community, because that will either bring it more into the national consciousness or not. I mean, the UFC, I think, has, you know, they're mature enough, I think, business that their appeal is across gender lines. You know, it's probably skewed still heavily for men to be fans, but, you know, there's lots of celebrity and reasons to go to a UFC fight that are not just about the fight now. And so it'd be interesting, because that always trickles down to, like, you know, the interest and the familiarity that parents have with kids, and that the kids are what seed those future champions, you know, getting exposed early. Well, whether or not Brazil gives way to other areas, where you're still my champion, Professor.
You're trying to make that up, man. Trying to make it back. No.
I got to figure out how to get myself out of trouble. Well, listen, if nothing else, it sounds like it was a great experience. I appreciate you kind of sharing your perspective on it. As we kind of wrap up, I mean, anything else that you would want to add about, like, just the nature of, you know, jiu-jitsu's place in people's, you know, minds as a sport, as a spectator?
Yeah, I will highlight some things that happened there at the ADCC, because, again, it was a great event, the biggest public ever.
Right.
So probably the next one will be even bigger. Seeing a lot of people from, like, not necessarily jiu-jitsu people, but, like, having fun watching ADCC, which, coming back to that subject on having people, something more entertainment, it will help the sport grow for sure. On that ADCC, we have for the first time the inductor for the Hall of Fame of ADCC.
Oh, that's right.
Which was awesome, because we could see legends of the sport being named, being recognized for everything that they did, not just in a sports scenario, but responsible for all the generations that came after them.
Yeah.
Right. So a couple members of the Gracie family have, like, Hansel Gracie over there, Hoyler Gracie, Kira Gracie, Roger Gracie, Saulo Ribeiro, Barry Yoshida, like guys that was competing on the very first Wow. ADCC, Ricardo Arona, Zé Amaya. It was awesome to see that, you know, the sport giving back a little bit and the crowd respecting that.
Yes.
Right? We also had a Xande Ribeiro and Rafael Lovato doing their last jiu-jitsu match.
Right.
They're both retired after that. And the respect of the whole public, those 14 or 15,000 people yelling, you know, keeping up. Yeah. Applauding them, and that was something really cool to see the sport growing, but you still have the respect from each other, the way how it should be, everything, but especially like a martial art. So it was definitely really cool to see that.
Yeah, oh, I'm so glad you told me that, because I didn't know that. And the fact that there were names from a different era that got presented to people who might not have known them, and that the crowd was receptive to learning about, look, these are the people that lay the groundwork for today's, you know, without them, we're not here. And that everybody was respectful and interested.
Yeah, like guys like that, though. And like also like Braulio Stima, Marcel Garcia, André Galvão also, of course, he went to get inducted to the Hall of Fame. So it was really, really nice. It was really cool.
Terrific. Yeah. All right. So, you know, our goal here in the jiu-jitsu mindset is to encourage you to try jiu-jitsu if you haven't. You know, that's one of our primary interests. And you may not find jiu-jitsu on television or, you know, sports to go be a spectator. You're going to have to go down to your local school and take a look at like what it looks like on the at the beginner level and all of that. And hopefully as the sport grows, you're going to get a chance to have more, you'll have more opportunities to see the sport performed at its highest level. And for those of you that are listening that are practicing jiu-jitsu, we want to encourage you to stay at it. We talk about the blue belt curse. If you're like me and you're a blue belt, we want you to stay, keep going, because the more you develop your jiu-jitsu vocabulary, the more interesting, you know, your experience is. And you only get that by staying in it. So if you're someone that's like me and you have a little bit of experience, you're still a beginner, but you're, you know, you need to hang in because it just gets better and better as they go. Got to find a great professor like my professor, Professor Lucas Hubo here, because you have to be taught by somebody who can set the right environment. But if you find the right environment, I think you're going to be surprised at how important it becomes in your life. So, Professor, thanks for telling us about the great championship you went to just a little bit ago.
Thank you so much, Pete, and thanks so much, everyone, for being listening to us and looking forward for more days like that.
For sure. All right, we'll see you guys next week.